Hey there, this is Rish Outfield from the future, giving you a little introduction to this episode. A warning, if you will. This is, in my opinion, the most indulgent episode of the Rish Outcast that you will ever hear. And so consider that a warning if that's something you're not interested in. If you feel I'm long-winded to begin with, At the end of the episode, this is kind of a spoiler, but not really. I say this is the worst episode we've ever done. And I disagree with that. What I tried to do was ask myself questions and hope that the answers would be interesting. This episode is late because I had assumed, stupidly, that the me of the past asked questions and then was silent for me to answer the questions, but the me of the past had things that he wanted to talk about and would just go on. And that surprised me because I wanted to get this episode out in August of 2021 for the symmetry of the thing and discovered that that would be much more difficult to do than I thought. So what I ended up having to do was edit the 2020 episode and put in empty spaces when I had asked a question so that I could insert my answers there. I was able to do that, and then I forgot my recorder when I went to the cabin. I'm at the cabin again. I woke up early, woke up before my alarm, and something that I told myself last night is the first thing that you do tomorrow is record that August to August episode. Do it. There's no need for it to be even later. And I didn't do it. I recorded something else when I woke up this morning. Then I saw that it was almost time for my alarm to go off that wakes me up every morning. And I said, okay, first thing I'm going to do after that alarm goes off is record this episode. And I didn't do that either. I splashed some water on my face. I brushed my teeth. I wouldn't want to horrify you with my morning breath. But no more beating around the bush. Here we are. Let's get this episode out there. All right, so I'm sitting in the cabin here, and you should be able to hear the difference in audio quality. So that will tell you when I'm in the car and you can hear the terrible noise of the car, that's 2020. And when you can hear this, that's 2021. Like I said, rather indulgent, but I disagree with Rish Outfield of 2020. I don't think this is the worst episode I've ever produced. Third worst. All right, here we go. Hey there, Rish of the future. This is Rish from August 2020. Plague year 2020. Last night I went running at about 11:15, 11:30. And while I was running, I got this idea of recording an interview with the Rish Outfield of, say, December 1st, 2020. That's 4 months away. It's the first of August. Well, now it's the second, but pretend that it's still the first. I thought I would ask myself some questions and then answer them, and it might be entertaining for my listeners, but even if it isn't, it's entertaining for me, and, you know, that's what this is really for. So, such an unusual year for me, and you're at the very end of the year, the last month of 2020, a year that's going to go down in history for multiple reasons, but for you, it was the year of your big midlife crisis. Of your existential crisis of, who am I? What could I do to be more happy? How come I'm not happy? What can I do with the time that I have left? And in 2020, well, starting on the 1st of February, I've written every single day. Have you written every single day? Did that continue? And if so, why? If not, why not? All right. It's a fine question. First off, this eventually in the episode, I decide to leave it a year rather than leave it to the end of the year, just so that I would have more perspective. And while I was editing this yesterday, I thought to myself, well, why not leave it a second year? Why not leave it till 2022? But something told me that that's just procrastination. It's just laziness. The episode would be no better in 2022 than it will be in 2021. And so, yes, every single day since February 1st, 2020, I have written. If I wanted to look it up, well, I can't because I'm here at the cabin, I could see how many words approximately I had written. And when I say approximately, it's so hard to keep track of every single word that you write each day. Except for like once in this past year and a half, I have written on computers. I don't write it in the notebook. And so it should be easy to keep track of my numbers. Initially, it was just month to month, you know. I'm going to write every single day this month. I'm going to write every single day in March. All right? I'm going to write every single day in April. And eventually it became, you know, let's keep it up. Here's a new month. There have been so many times that I have told myself, okay, let's put the brakes on this. I've done fine. There's so many other things I could do and that I could focus on than writing every single day. And yet I continue to do it. And part of it is that I feel like once I stop, then chain is broken. It's a record for me. I mean, it was a record for me a year ago. But it has been really interesting to see how long I could keep it going. And I feel like we're at the end here, in the end of summer 2021. And that's fine. It will be a relief when I stop writing every single day. Because sometimes it was arbitrary. It was work. It was just, yeah, I don't really want to write, but I'm going to do this and I'll work on that. And I've had fewer episodes of the show because of it. And my publishing has gone way, way down, almost to a trickle, whatever is below a trickle, you know, maybe an intermittent drip. But I know that when it stops, then I can focus on other things and I'll look back and be super proud that I managed to write, you know, a year and a half. I am proud of that. How do you feel the writing has gone this year? Have you done some of your best work? Have you done some of your worst work? That's a difficult question to answer because I never let up. I never stopped. And boy, that was the hardest thing, I think. Well, the hardest thing was writing on days that I was tired or I didn't feel well or I had other things going on. I was like, how do I shove this into, I have to replace sleep with writing, don't I? But the second hardest thing was when I would finish something, when I would reach the end, I couldn't rest on my laurels. I had to continue writing the next day. And so that created a bunch of false starts where it's just like, okay, I had an idea for this. I will start on this. And that doesn't really go anywhere. Or it's difficult to do it every day. And when you're writing on a novel, it's actually easier because novels are so big. You always have that big project that you can go work on. I tend to see myself as a short story writer, and short stories can often be one and done. They can be something that you write in a weekend or over a couple of weeks. And I've gone far away from that, especially in 2021. I've written some novels. I wrote a Dead and Breakfast novel. I wrote a novel. In fact, I was working on it a year ago when I asked myself these questions called Hatchling. I really like Hatchling. I wrote a Halloween decoration story that I was really excited. I called it Underdecorated, but it's hard for me to say, let alone be satisfied with that as the title. I wrote my Little Caesars pizza story, finally. I finished writing a Ben Parks story. I wrote a story called Waffle Iron Man that I thought was fun. I wrote a novel about identical twins. And I'm almost done writing a Laura Deming novel, which is, I think, the longest piece that I've ever written. And I think that some of it was good work, but it is so hard for me to know. Just this week, I finished recording the audio for a story called The Last Friday in December. And it was a Dead and Breakfast story that I was super proud of and included my favorite thing that I had written in a while. And when I got to that part in the narration, I felt bad because it didn't do anything for me. And I thought, ooh, could I be wrong? And then also there are plenty of stories and pieces that I started and I didn't finish. I started writing just this year a novel about an outpost on a colony out in space that gets hit by a disease. And you can imagine why I would write something like that. And I was enjoying it. I abandoned it eventually, and I started writing a sequel to Lost and Found set in high school that I ran out of gas on, and that's too bad. But I feel like I will go back to that one sometime, and maybe as soon as I finish this novel. I don't know. It is one that I feel like is near and dear to my heart, and so, I really like those Will Schoner stories. I like the Ben Parks stories. I do like the Laura Deming stories. For a while there, you know, all I wrote was Dead and Breakfast stories. And I've pulled way, way, way back on that after I wrote the novel. I think I wrote one Dead and Breakfast story in 2021. And that's fine. It's really cool to be able to just jump from universe to universe. Is that a good way of describing it? Just like, you know, revisit a group of characters and then say goodbye to them and then go get together with some friends that I hadn't seen in a while. And I would really like to write the Third Calling story. I don't think that that will be this year, but maybe I'll set that as a goal for 2022. And I did start the Third Calling story, I want to say, in February or January of 2020. Just writing like the first scene. But that one will be difficult. And I've been pantsing these projects and it makes them sprawling and difficult to pin down, and they go wherever they want to go and they become longer than I intended for them to be. But the Calling 3, I need to outline really, really well so I know exactly where it's going. And it will be easy to write once I know exactly where it's going. So there is that. Let's go on to the next question, kids.
When you've been writing at your best, how has that felt?
Writing has always felt good. Well, like you said, at my best, it's always felt really, really solid. It's not always been the case that someone will read something that I write or hear something that I write and respond positively to it. But when they do, it's like a double validation. Oh, I thought it was good and I felt good. You say it is good and I feel even better.
And then conversely, the times when you didn't feel like writing, when that was the last thing you wanted to do, how did that feel? Did you write anyway?
Yeah, you know the answer to that question because I just said it. There were days that it was the last thing that I wanted to do. And I forced myself to do it. And it was like dental surgery. It was terrible. But the next day or the day after that, I feel more like writing again. And there have been times that I've gone to the library. And I like to go to the library because there are fewer distractions. And there are more distractions for me than there were for you, Rish, of the past, because I take my laptop with me now. And there's all sorts of things I can do on my laptop. But in the past, I wouldn't take my laptop with me. I would just go and I would use their computers, and all it has is Microsoft Word on it. And there is an internet program, and I would use the internet to do research or to write emails or whatever. But that was useful for focusing. Just like having this cabin where there's no internet and no other people is useful for focusing. But even then, there were times when I would waste a half an hour, I would waste 45 minutes. You know, I'd just be on Wikipedia checking out something, doing some kind of research, and then going off. And what, for example, the Dead and Breakfast stories take place in Idaho, and I would do a little bit of research of the history of Idaho and the indigenous peoples of Idaho and the various towns and the roads that go through it. And I'd say like 5% of that research was for the stories, and the rest was just me not writing, just being curious. And you could do a heck of a lot worse than that, though. Reading Wikipedia articles, I usually don't feel very guilty about, because it is a low level of education. You know, maybe it's indulgent, but it's learning new things. So yeah, I feel like I've answered that question. But when it was hard, it was really, really hard. But there have been times, there was just a day this week that I wrote a lot. And for me, anything over 1,000 words is an accomplishment. It's a lot of writing for me. You have your own barometer. Your mileage may vary, as they say. There's a guy on Facebook who boasted that he had gotten 8,400 words that day. And it disgusted me. But I can't be too hard on myself, because I'm not that guy. I'm not capable of 8,000 words in a day. If somebody said, here's $10,000, you need to write 8,000 words, I couldn't do it. I just couldn't do it. I would be so burnt out that when I reached the 8,000 words, they'd say, hey, Rish, I'm glancing over your second to last page. How many of those words are all work and no play make Jack a dull boy? Could you give me $5,000 for 4,000 words? And that's advice for you too, the listener. If you think that me writing every single day for a year is crazy, is something that you would not be capable of doing, then don't feel bad about it. But you can write 5 days in a row, or you can write every day for 2 weeks, or you can write 10,000 words in a month. You can do it. You just need to figure out what you're capable of and then go just a tiny bit beyond that. But yeah, you don't have to be like that guy on Facebook. I don't have to be like that guy on Facebook. We all have our own pace, and we all have our own capabilities, and we all have our own obligations and voices and things that are pulling us away from doing the daily work.
I mean, my guess is that your answers are going to be very similar to my answers, because 4 months from now, I'm not going to be a different person. Although, the me from a year ago, from August 1st, 2019, I don't know that I would necessarily recognize myself a year later. I'm thinner, and my outlook is different. Well, let's get to another question. So I've been exercising every single day.
Wait, that's it? Was that a question?
It started the last day of January when I went for a run, and it was the first run I had gone on in the new year, the first run I had gone on in a while. And during that run, I was just so frustrated with my life that I thought, you know, tomorrow I'm going to start writing every day, and I'm going to start blogging about it every day and see how many days in a row I can get it going, how many words I can accomplish. And the month of February was kind of spectacular, because I was really driven, really motivated to write. I had the muse going in the back of my head. And February has always been hard because it's winter and there's Valentine's Day. And I was compounded by, you know, just all these feelings and emotions. And I channeled it into my art. I wrote more in February 2020 than I have entire years, yeah. And I've never been able to match what I accomplished in February. And part of it is because, you know, because of the winter, you're indoors. And I would go to the library a couple of times every single week. I don't know how many times I went in February. But I would write, I would check out a computer, and they let you check it out for 2 hours. And there were a couple of times when 2 hours was not enough.
Okay, so I was talking about that already. I don't know why there was a pause there. Oh, let me just say, though, that February of 2020 is the most I will ever have written. The only conditions I can think of wherein I would write more in a month than I did that month would be if there was a deadline, like a publishing thing, and I had a contract and I had to do it, and there was money involved and consequences involved if I didn't do it. But it would not be as easy as February 2020 was. Nothing could be. It was me trying to change my life, me feeling all sorts of feelings I hadn't felt for a long time. Winter, like I said. And I really cannot say enough about how foul Valentine's Day is. It puts a pallor over the entire month. Just in the same way as, you know, an inmate knowing that the date of execution is coming. It just ruins everything that's leading up to it. And, you know, if you feel differently, that's just swell. But you are wrong. And it was this confluence of various events, of various things. I always have the writers' conference in February. I had ideas, things in my head that I wanted to write. And now I had the time to write them, or the inclination to write them. Like I said, I'm never going to eclipse that. And I don't even want to. Maybe one day when I'm, you know, in my late 50s or something like that, I'll say, oh gosh, do you remember February of 2020? I wrote X number of words that year, that month. Maybe I could beat that. Just we're going to do 1 month of like really, really intense writing every single day and see if we can beat that number. I hope I live long enough to try that. But it seems unlikely, like I said, a confluence of events. And something that we haven't talked about here, but we will talk about, is that I was just crazy head over heels into this girl. And I projected this girl into my mind as my muse. That, you know, I can't do something that will impress her. I don't have a lot of money. I don't have an impressive physique. I don't have, you know, a face that launched 1,000 ships, but I can write. And so I focused on that too. And it, like I said, it was a bunch of different things all lined up that made for a super productive time in my life.
I started going to the park in February, and I started going up and down the stairs. It was the beginning of this exercise thing, which eventually would become exercise every single day. I started out not being able to run very far. I could run a block and then walk a block. And then, you know, after 3 or 4 blocks, I eventually would just be too tired and I would come home. But as the weeks went by and I did it more and more, I could go farther. Eventually, it became a mile I would run, walk. After a while, I would stretch myself, depending on the day. And eventually, I came up with a route that I really liked that is 1.6 miles. And that's what I would take every single time I went for a run. And that's what I took last night. Sometimes, just depending on how tired I am, I can not stop. Sometimes I do have to walk for like a half a block, and then I can find my second wind and just go for the rest of the time. I'm not competing with anybody. I'm not trying to run a marathon. I'm not trying to look good for the guy on the treadmill next to me, because that is so pointless. And I understand, because it's human nature. And I have that same competitive streak that all males do. But I just, it's something that I do for me to make myself feel good. And I could do more. I could work harder. There have been times when I get home and I'm just drenched in sweat and I'm gasping. And then there are other times when, you know, I still have a little bit of reserve energy because I didn't punish myself that badly. I guess this isn't really an interview anymore, is it? It's just a monologue. But tell me about your... Did you keep up the exercise? Did you keep up the running?
That's a fine question. That's something that I am just as proud of as I am the writing every single day. Yeah, every day for more than a year now, I have exercised. I do sit-ups every single day. And now I do push-ups every single day. And there have been days that I have been sick, and there have been days that I have been hurt. And I still made myself do it. And I think that that's when the real dedication shows. It is easy to do something when you feel like doing it. But there's an old dictum about when you don't feel like doing something until you do feel like it. And that's, in a little while, I'll start talking about my Uncle John, and that's his attitude. The exercise has been interesting because there have been times when I didn't want to write, but I did want to exercise. Somehow that was easier. You know, compacting my body in sit-ups or making my arms push me up from the floor was mechanical, and it was somehow less tiring than trying to write. And I would not have guessed that that was the case before 2020. And the running, boy, I hated running. And I remember in gym class, it was the thing that I hated the most. But I have enjoyed it so much over the last year and a half, because it's something that I can do, and I listen to music or to podcasts or to YouTube while I'm running. It's a part of my day that I actually look forward to most of the time. I think that that has answered your question, but it's still something that surprises me, and I think you have something to say about it, so let's continue with you.
Something that I started doing in May was I would do sit-ups every single day because, yes, I'm exercising, and it's made a difference, definitely, with my health and with how I feel, but it didn't make that big a difference with how I looked. I'm still fat. And so in May, I started this goal of doing sit-ups every single day, and I did it. And in June, I upped the number of sit-ups, and then in July, I set this goal of 3,333 sit-ups in the month, and it was easy. There was this weekend in July when I challenged myself to do 1,000 sit-ups in a weekend, and I did it. And just this past Thursday, I challenged myself to do 500 sit-ups in a day, and I did it. How are you doing? How did you keep up the sit-ups? How many did you ultimately end up doing? And are you still fat?
So I just answered that already. Yeah, I did sit-ups every day since you recorded that. I did them last night. As for am I still fat? Yes. But I'm so much healthier. I'm not as fat. Is that fair to say? There are times when I see myself, especially my stomach, in the mirror, and I go, hey, that's not so bad. And then there are other times when I go, oh, what was I thinking? But I console myself a little bit with the idea that muscle weighs more than fat. And so maybe I still weigh the same, but it's a better kind of weight.
I know what you're going to say, because I had this conversation with Big and he was telling me that I'm always going to be fat, because the people who are in really, really good shape, they take vitamin supplements, they change their diet, they have various drugs that they take, you know, they have personal trainers, they do more than just sit-ups. And they also have a physical propensity. We all have a body type. And mine has never been a muscular body. My dad was never fat his whole life, but he was never muscular. He just had this body type. And I think I inherited a little bit from my mom's side of the family. They tend to be heavier. My grandmother was always fat. My mom and her sisters are always struggling with their weight. But, you know, I can still be the best me that I can be, and I'm not quite there yet. So we'll still go. Luckily, I discovered that Coke Zero tastes really good. And I know that somebody who's a fitness guru would say, well, that, I don't care. It's still soda, and that is still super bad for you. You would be better off drinking water than Coke Zero. And I hear you. But I need my caffeine, and I'm not going to drink coffee. So Coke Zero is the compromise. And I still don't drink Coke Zero all the time. One of my rules was, if a place that I go has Coke Zero, that's what I will drink. But if they don't, I'm not going to force myself to drink some awful diet soda or whatever. I will just drink regular soda. And it's just as far of a sacrifice as I'm willing to go. And you know, I hope future me, if there is a future me, if I'm dead, then who cares? But I hope future me, if he's alive, can forgive me. I can understand. I said a couple of years ago that there were three things that gave me joy in life. And one of them was talking about movies with my friends. And one of them was Pepsi. And I sacrificed the Pepsi just to see. I don't remember how long I went, but I went without soda for, it was at least a month, and it didn't make a difference at all. And so I'll never do that again.
Good for you, man. The thing with Coke Zero is that it really does taste good. Unfortunately, I saw this commercial the other day. It was horrible. It was maybe in the bottom three commercials I've ever seen. And it went, is Coke Zero the best tasting Coke ever? And they had a bunch of like Andy Warhol type animation clips of people saying, yes, yes, no, 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 yes, 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 no, yes. And it was, that's something that they show in the waiting room in hell. It made me ashamed that I am a fan of Coke Zero, that I have contributed so much money to the Coca-Cola company for that product. Yes, 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 no. Yes, 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 no. Yes, no. Yes, no. Yes, 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 no. Yes, no. One other thing, though, is I have tried some diet sodas. Because, you know, the big ad campaign for Diet Dr. Pepper is that it tastes more like regular Dr. Pepper. And so I tried it, and it did. It didn't taste bad to me. There have been a few that have not tasted bad to me. There is a Mountain Dew Zero Sugar, one of their off Mountain Dews. That's not just the green Mountain Dew. You know what I'm talking about? That tastes just wonderful. Tastes excellent. It does not taste like a diet soda at all, unless you let it sit. Like an hour later, there is a weird chemical taste to it. And I can't quite explain that, but it's disturbing. But yeah, feel proud of yourself, man. There are so many ways that you can slip and that you can fall short of expectations or fall short of your goals. Let's focus on the things that you do accomplish, the things that you do well, that you work toward and actually make progress on. It's so easy to say, well, I got these three goals, but I failed on these two goals. And so I have to hang my head in shame. Why not hold your head up high for the three goals you did accomplish?
Yesterday, my uncle came over and he said, he has this really addictive personality. I don't know if addictive personality, but he has one of those binge mentalities. I don't know how you'd say it. He can't eat one chip or one cookie. He has to eat it all. And he said that he had been trying to diet, and the only solution for him was just not to eat. That earlier in the week, he decided not to eat anything. And he went 2.5 days before he finally broke down and he's like, okay, I got to eat. You know, that's admirable. I dislike myself a great deal, as you know, but I don't hate myself that much. There was one day a couple months back when I didn't eat anything. And sorry, that's as far as I'm going to go. This, again, is not an interview. Sorry. Well, let me know how the rest of the year has been with that.
Okay, again, I got to warn you listening at home, there are a lot of these where he just goes on. And that's part of the reason this episode is late, is I expected that I'd be able to answer his questions. But was that a question? No, he was just talking, and that's fine. I'm talking about my Uncle Len there, and he does have this I have to eat it all personality or aspect to him, and that is very difficult for him. And I have another friend that is much the same way, and he is a big believer in not eating anything. You know, it's like it's easier for me to say I will not eat anything today than to say I will only eat four chips or I will only eat half a sandwich. And that is super alien for me to understand. But if it works for him, then it works for him. I mentioned Pepsi being one of my favorite things in the world, and I haven't had a Pepsi in a while. There is a Pepsi equivalent of Coke Zero, but it's not good. It tastes just like, you know, a diet soda. Yeah, that's strange. Somehow Coke has gained my business and Pepsi has lost it. But I love donuts. I love them. And one of the things that I do, and it is an indulgence and I probably shouldn't do it, is that I will always get a couple of donuts to bring to the cabin so that I can have them to eat either for breakfast or just at some point tomorrow. I think there's been one day that I've come up here without donuts. And it was just like, oh yeah, shoot. I don't have any donuts. That's something that Rish of 2020 and Rish of 2021 can understand. It's not healthy for you. Oh my gosh, I saw this news story the other day that said that some nutrition specialist put out a paper that said that every hot dog that you eat takes off approximately 35 minutes from your lifespan. And I found that just absolutely horrifying. It upset me. And then Seth Meyers made a joke about it on his monologue where he said, you know, that would explain why the competitive eater, the guy, and he said his name, who will eat, you know, like 207 hot dogs in a row at a 4th of July competition. That would explain why this guy died in 1791. The thing is, we're not just here on this earth to suffer. There is plenty of that suffering to go around. And you do see from time to time people who really, truly do suffer. And it's heartbreaking. But if there are easy things that make you happy, whether it's a soda, whether it's the one cigarette that you smoke when you finish some project, whether it's donuts, something that is bad for you, but it gives you joy, I'm not going to judge. Just try not to smoke the whole pack. Try not to buy a dozen donuts for you to eat in one sitting. But hey, you do you. If you're able to cut that stuff out of your life completely, you probably will live longer. hot dogs.
During the stretch when all the restaurants were closed and I had no social outlet, because I'd gotten to the point where Tuesdays were the only days that I would go out with a friend and eat and stuff. And when the pandemic happened and they started to say, you can't do that, the food, the going out to eat just dried up. And I'm sure it helped with my weight, but eventually the restaurants started opening again. Some of the restaurants you can go in and sit. And I'm sure that today I will go to a Burger King or I will go somewhere and I will eat. And I don't feel bad about that. You have to eat to keep the body going. And I do this exercise every single night, and something has to fuel that. I was thinking about that last night while I was running. I was like, well, how many tacos that I ate tonight will be worked off by my exercise? And the answer was probably less than one, but it was something. So I hope that the rest of your year has been productive in some way and that you have enjoyed exercise. That's something that we can talk about is I did eventually start to anticipate the exercise or rather anticipate the dopamine that my brain would release for exercising. And that was kind of cool.
Yeah, that's something that Big Ankelvich told me about. He used to run every single day when his kids were in school. I think it was before he had had the last kid. The last kid. Rated R. He would take the kids to school and then he had the entire morning to himself before he had to go to work. And he started running. And something that helped motivate him was to record himself running on video every single day and then edit it into a montage with like Eye of the Tiger or something playing in the background. And I gotta say, it was super inspiring to watch these videos. I was happy for my friend, and he said that it felt good. It was hard, but it felt good. And I get that. And he explained to me, I had forgotten the word dopamine. I thought it was endorphins that your brain released. And maybe dopamine is the name of the endorphin, the particular one that your brain releases. I don't know.
I don't know.
Are you out of your mind?
Yeah, thanks. I definitely looked forward to that. Unfortunately, it doesn't always happen. I don't always get the rush. There are times when I do my run and it's kind of mechanical and I get home and I'm either really sweaty or it's just like, okay, there's that. I did that. I still do the exact same route, the 1.6 miles. And I remember there being a couple of days, and it was usually after I had seen that girl, when I went above and beyond that. It's like, I'm going to do 2 miles today. But I don't do that anymore. I should. I should expand it sometime and say, okay, hey, I'm going to go a couple extra blocks. There's always room for improvement.
Okay, so we're going to continue with the interview with this masturbatory exercise. So the end of the year has come. 2020, people are going to talk about 2020 for a long time. Right now, you know, just over the halfway point, a lot of people are saying that it is the worst year in history, you know, or that they have ever experienced. What do you think? How was it for you? I mean, is it possible that somebody could say 2020 was the best year they have experienced?
Sure. You know, somebody like Dua Lipa, who nobody had heard of in 2019, had a tremendous year in 2020. And now that it's 2021, I hear like 3 or 4 of her new songs on the radio all the time. So she's doing great. There are people that bonded with their families. There are people that discovered that they had talents that they didn't know that they had. There are people that met people and changed their lives in the plague year, plague years now, sadly. And that's something that I expected for you to be talking about. I knew that eventually the political questions would come. And I thought, oh boy, here we go. when I have to talk about the election and when I have to talk about January 6th, then I have to talk about where the world still is all the way a year later. But I never get into that. So I'm not going to bring that stuff up. I am surprised because that was something that was on everybody's mind. It was such a divisive year. It was such a politically tumultuous year. And I found that people had the capacity to weaponize the coronavirus as a political issue. That was particularly vile, but people did it and people continue to do it. And it hasn't gone away. And boy, Rish of 2020, if you knew that we're on the fourth wave now, and there are tons of people that are still getting it and still spreading it and still coming up with conspiracy theories and still lying, it would really bum you out. And here's something to bum everybody out. My Uncle Len that I mentioned in that recording a year ago is in the hospital now, and he does have coronavirus. He does have the Delta variant of COVID-19, and he's been in the hospital for days. You know, by the time this comes out, it will have been weeks that he's been there. And the poor guy is really, really suffering. And he didn't have to. If this pandemic had been handled better and people had made the hard choice early on and gone a different way with the masks and with the lockdowns and with et cetera, et cetera, my uncle would not be in the hospital right now and not suffering. And what sucks is that his wife also went to the hospital at the same time, and she's not nearly as badly off as he is. But it was avoidable. And who knows, maybe in a year from now, in August of 2022, this is still a problem. This is still something that is divisive and people are arguing and screaming about and lying about. And that's just so sad and such a waste. Boy, let's talk about Pepsi and donuts again.
I have, you know, tried to make these changes and tried to do the writing thing, and it's been hard. The last couple of nights were so hard to write. I was so tired. I've had to get up early. We helped my Aunt Blanca move for some reason. We had to start at 8 a.m., which meant that, you know, I had to get up just a few hours after I had gone to sleep. Well, I mean, you know how sleep works.
Yeah. Yeah, I do.
But at the end of the day, I just didn't have the energy to write. I just couldn't care. Right now I'm writing this hatchling story and I don't know where it's going. I'm pantsing it, as they say. And it's brutal. I don't know if I'll ever finish the story. I don't know when I finish it, if it was a good story or not, if it was worth all this effort. But I am committed to doing it every single day. And so last night and the night before particularly, that was the worst night. I just couldn't keep my eyes open, and every word cost me. I'd get up and I'd go in the living room and do some sit-ups just as like to get my heart going again, and so I could come back and try to write again. It's not something that I recommend, but I think that it's probably character building. That's when it separates, you know, the hobbyists from the real writers. I guess I've already talked to you about this, but here you are at the end of the year. How proud are you of what you accomplished in 2020? And do you feel like you could have done better?
Well, yeah, of course you could do better. You know, George Lucas kicked himself on all the things that he saw in Star Wars that fell short of his expectations. And he couldn't let it go. To the detriment of that film, you can always do better. We're not perfect beings, dude. There's not a soul that can't look back and say that I wish that I'd done this better, or, oh boy, that was a huge mistake, or, oh shoot, that's one of my big regrets. But that's how we grow as people, and that's how we learn. And a lot of times you have to fall on your face before you can learn anything, because we are dumb. And I'm not, well, yeah, I'm not going to mention Uncle Len in that breath. But I mentioned my Aunt Blanca. So she moved away from Las Vegas, and a couple of her nephews got COVID early, early on. And then her own daughter got COVID. And she actually had somebody try to convince her that it was all a hoax, that it wasn't a thing. And Blanca said, no, it's not a hoax. And the lady said to her, oh yeah? Do you know anybody who actually got COVID? So Blanca was able to say, my own daughter got COVID. At the time that I recorded this in August, I hadn't gotten it. I eventually did get it in December, and I felt bad about that. I felt embarrassed about that. I felt like I had failed, like I was being punished in some way. I felt unclean, like a leper or whatever. And I did a whole episode about it, and you've heard that episode probably. I know that the question was, how did you feel about the year? And you can feel two things. You can feel really proud of what you did accomplish and disappointed in yourself about the things that you didn't accomplish. And I mentioned early on in this that there were some stories that I started. There was a book that I started and I didn't finish. And most of those things will never be finished, even with writing every single day. And even with writing every single day, I got a couple of ideas for short stories. One of my Facebook friends will put up writing prompts every day. And it bothers me. It's like, why do it every single day? Who has time to write a whole story based on your prompt in one day? But, you know, she's trying to help people. And maybe she's not writing the stories herself. She's just sharing prompts. But there were a couple where I was just like, oh, hey, that creates in my mind a mental picture that would make a really good story. But I've been bogged down on this book that I'm writing, a book called When You Need It Most. And so I couldn't sit down and write the short story and take away from this novel, which is so close to being done. And those ideas just fled. They disappeared. They faded away. If there is a muse and she's a female with a wand and long hair and boobies, I like this idea that, you know, she hits you with the wand. Here you go. Here's inspiration for you. And then you don't write that story that she inspired you with. And she's just like, oh, well, F you then. I'll go talk to somebody else. You know, I know that it's not really like that, but I can't help but feel that way. And it's a shame. Some of those stories would surely have been good. And I could have made a couple bucks from them by publishing them, or by running them on this show. Literally a couple of bucks. But they're gone. They're done. They're out of my hands. And I can't even remember the idea anymore. Although I could go through all of her Facebook posts and see the prompts and see if maybe it sparks something in my mind. That's something that I can do if I finish this book. And for me to finish this book, I have to finish this episode. Oh boy, guys.
You know, a lot of this was because of my midlife crisis, because of fear of what am I going to leave behind? Oh, it's almost done. And what do I have to show for myself? But then also, you know, I met somebody and I really was swept off my feet of just like, how can somebody go through life this optimistic and this bright and this effusive? I wanted that. I wanted to feel that. I wanted to be able to say that, you know, I recognized this feeling that I was feeling from when I was young, and that it wasn't all over, that if I could feel that again, then maybe the credits aren't rolling and the people are getting up out of their seats. Oh my gosh. So I'm in a time period where movie theaters, most of them are closed, and they're still talking about reopening, and then they'll move the dates. You know, this Christopher Nolan movie Tenet was supposed to come out, and then it got bumped, and then it was supposed to come out, and it got bumped, and it got bumped again, and now we're wondering, will it come out? And I remember, I mean, obviously it wasn't a long time ago, but there would be this break for the exits as soon as the credits started to roll. I mean, luckily with like Marvel movies and some movies where they'd put the opening titles at the end, there was something to keep part of the audience there in their seats. But even then, it was just, oh, it was a mad dash for the exits because, you know, somebody had dumped a tear gas canister in the middle of the theater, apparently, as soon as the director credit came up on screen.
Yeah, theaters did reopen. Almost all the theaters did. There were some that stayed closed, stayed shuttered. I remember up in Canada, there were entire cities where they said, nope, sorry, I know that other cities in Canada, you can go to the movies, but not here. And it was fun to see people who really wanted to see movies travel so that they could find a place where there was a theater that was open. But attendance is way, way down. And time will have to tell us whether theaters bounce back and we get hit movies the way that we did before the pandemic. The genie might be out of the bottle, though, as far as like streaming and people just being too accustomed to just being able to watch it at home. And there are people with families with a bunch of kids that say it's cheaper for me to pay for it on Disney Plus for $30 than to take my kids out to see it in the theater a single time. And if we pay for it, they can watch it multiple times if they want. We're not here to talk about movies. Let's on to the next question.
What the hell? How did I get talking about movie theaters? Oh, okay. So I was just wondering, do you regret that? Do you look back and say, what a dumb person I was? Oh, okay. So in 2002, there was this woman that I met and was very nice to me. And I started to want to better myself when I was around this woman. I started running every single day and made these rules about when I could eat and stuff because I didn't want to be fat. I wanted to be somebody that she could look at and say, oh, yeah, I remember him. Yeah, he's cool or whatever. It's hard to know. I mean, that's 18 years ago. But she went away at the end of 2002. And I never saw her again. I exchanged an email with her. So there, a year later, 2 years later, whatever, I would think about my feelings for her. I would think about my obsession with her. I don't know that it was an obsession, even. It was just, I was fixated on her, and I just thought, oh my gosh, why can't I meet somebody like that? And I would be embarrassed. Like I had done something wrong. Like I was a child. And you were looking back at a love poem that you had written as a child. Is that something that you feel now, still, at the end of 2020?
At the end of 2021, that is a complicated question to answer. So she is gone from my life. I haven't seen her in months. And I really do feel like meeting this person and being at this point in my life where I was worried about what lay ahead, they contributed to the exercise and the writing every day and the ideas and ambition. But here's a surprise for you, Rish of 2020. I'm still doing it. I'm still doing it even without that particular element. And so that tells me that it wasn't entirely external, that the midlife crisis would have come anyway, probably, that it is up to me to improve myself, even if it is just in very small ways. And I'm not embarrassed about the way that I felt. I'm not embarrassed about the person that I wanted to become. You know, there are a couple of moments when I was just like, oh. But it's mostly because I'm not where I want to be. There's no happy ending attached to this. And maybe there are no happy endings in life. Maybe life just continues until it doesn't. And it's up to you to make the best of today. And we'll see what happens when we get to tomorrow. I don't know. Next question.
I don't know. I'm too close to myself. You know, it's kind of like with my stories. When I write a story, I don't know if it's good or not. I don't know if somebody else is going to like it or respond to it, you know, find it scary or funny or sad or exciting or romantic, because I'm too close to it. It came from within me. It's stuff that speaks to me. It's to my tastes, you know, the things that I am scared of, the things that I find amusing. It's so hard to know objectively how things are going, how things, whether something is good or not.
That wasn't a question, but I agree.
It's hard to say whether something is going to be well received or whether it's good, but I wonder, here, let me ask you this question. Does it matter how well it's received by somebody else? If you wrote something and nobody liked it, was it not worth doing? If you wrote something and only you liked it, what does that say?
Well, it depends on who you're writing it for. If you're writing it for yourself, then you're the only person that you have to answer to. But if you're trying to make money, if you're trying to write something that is commercially viable, that will draw new audience members toward you, make fans, then it does matter what they think. I would enjoy talking to somebody who wrote a movie that was unsuccessful. One of those things that's a giant career ender. Something like Cutthroat Island, Mars Needs Moms, Heaven's Gate, things that are so disastrous that they end careers or shut down studios and say, was that not worth doing? Did the fact that that was a tremendous disaster mean that you didn't do a good job on it? That you regret ever having done it? It's an interesting question because let's say that you interviewed the person who wrote Cutthroat Island right before it came out and asked how you feel about the work that you did. And then you ask them after, is it Carolco that put that out and it torpedoed their entire company, and see if the answer changes. I feel so bad that this episode is this long. Let's go on to the next one.
Here's another thing. I was going to ask you about the Dead and Breakfast story. So for a year now, and we're over a year, but for a year, I went hard and heavy on that Dead and Breakfast story. I think I wrote 9 of them and started work on 2 others. Unfortunately, the last one turned into a novel. And when that happened, it just derailed everything. I wish that I had been able to turn it into like 4 short stories instead of a novel, because then I wouldn't feel so... Like all of my momentum had gone, because there was a time when like every month or every other month I had finished another one of these, and it felt really, really good when I finished another one. I've talked about it. You've talked about it. The 2 best words in a writer's life are the and end of reaching the end of a story or a novel. Oh, it feels so good. So much accomplished. And if I didn't finish that novel, the Dead and Breakfast one, which is called Only Have Eyes, then was all that time wasted? Was it wasted writing? Was it for nothing?
That's a hard question to answer, because I did finish it. Thank Buddha. I agree with what you said. I wish that it had been 3 or 4 short stories. Because I am not a novelist. I don't do books as well as I do short stories. But if I hadn't finished it, I guess it's kind of like we had the Olympics this year, and there were people who exercised and practiced and worked and worked and worked until they got, you know, in the best shape of their lives. And then right before the Olympics happened, they got COVID or they got hurt. And it's so easy to say, yeah, that was all wasted. But, you know, maybe those same nutritionists that decried hot dogs will say, yeah, but that person will live another 6 months to a year longer because of the exercise that they did preparing for the Olympics that didn't happen. I don't have an answer
for you on that. I did finish Only Have Eyes, but if I had not finished it, I would feel like that was all wasted, in the same way that I feel like the Outpost story, it was wasted, or the unfinished Ben Parks story is wasted, or Balms and Sears, this story that I keep putting on my list of New Year's resolutions. This year, I'm going to finish Balms and Sears. Every year that it doesn't come out, it's wasted. It's not entirely true that it is wasted time, but it sure feels that way. You know, all the podcasts that I've put out, how important is it that people listen to them, that people like them, that people look forward to them? Okay, for a couple of years there, I would work for Audible. I would do audiobooks for people. And I think it was last year, 2019, I made the mistake of going through my sales history on Audible. Maybe it was 2018. But there were a couple of books, audiobooks I had done that had never sold a single copy. And that was horrifying. The thought that all of that work was for nothing. It was really humbling.
Humbling? Huh. No, I wouldn't say that it was
humbling. I don't know if humbling is the word that I... How about humiliating?
There you go.
Anyhow, I guess you could say that I bettered myself. I honed my art. I found out how to do audiobooks better by doing those books. In which case, all right, if you say so. Here's the funny thing is 4 months is no time at all. Maybe I will have lost a pound in 4 months, but nothing in my mind or my heart is going to be any different unless I had some terrible loss in my family. Somebody got COVID-19 and they didn't survive it, that kind of thing. You know, somebody was killed in a car accident and it changed my whole outlook on life.
Sure.
I mean, there could also be good that happen. No, I can't sell that. So again, like I said, this is masturbatory. There's no good that can come of this, except for that maybe this will be an interesting discussion for an episode. Questions that I asked at the beginning of August and I'm answering at the end of the year. A time capsule episode or whatever. Although it would be better if I put it away and picked it up again at the beginning of August 2021. That would be interesting to look back at 2020 when it is deep in the rear view instead of just almost ending.
Your wish is granted. That's all I gotta say. Next.
I don't know. Maybe I'll ask somebody who I respect their opinion. Is it better to do this Q&A in a year than to do it in 4 months? But I'm leaning toward a year. It seems like that would be something to look forward to ask myself in a year, what a difference a day makes, 365 days make.
You know, you've got a point there. I remember about May or June seeing these files that say August to August on my hard drive and thinking, oh yeah, hey, that's something that I'm looking forward to. That'll be fun in August to be able to record that interview with myself. Now that it's happening, and boy, I'm gonna have to edit this again. It's much less exciting and invigorating. But I hope that the people listening are getting something out of it. It's an experiment. Maybe somebody out there will be inspired to do this with themselves. It's like, okay, it's December 31st, and I'm going to sit down and ask myself a few questions in audio. And then next year on December 31st, I will address those questions. It's a good idea.
Anyhow, one of my big flaws in life, and believe me, there are many, but one of them is I have a lack of self-esteem. I'm not often very fond of myself. And there's no way that that can change in 4 months. It can't even change in a year. I believe that's something that has developed in me when I was at my most malleable. You know, the seminal years of 13 to 16 or something like that. That's what made me into who I am today. But, oh boy, it would sure be neat if things changed a little bit. You know, having lost some of this weight, having gained some muscle, I do feel a little bit more confident.
Good.
Definitely not romantically.
Oh, okay. Well, no, of course not. You didn't even leave me time to answer.
But like when we were helping my aunt move the three times. So here's the thing. We went up to Las Vegas. We emptied out her house into a U-Haul. And that was the hardest work because it was in Vegas and there weren't a lot of us. It was manual labor. It was sweaty. It was miserable. But then a couple of days later, we took the contents of the two vehicles and unloaded them into a storage unit here in town because her house in Vegas had not yet sold. They hadn't finalized on the new house. Then this week, she had sold the old house. They've moved into a new one. We went to the storage unit and unloaded it to move all the stuff, the furniture and all that, into the new house. And having exercised every single day for months, I was actually surprised a couple of times when I couldn't lift something. But I felt like I was in pretty darn good shape. I was able to actively help, even if it was the heaviest stuff. And so that I'm not going to say did wonders for my self-esteem, but it did improve my self-esteem, being not the alpha male, but one of the ones that did the heavy lifting, so to speak. That's remarkable. That's neat to see that evolution in myself. And maybe that could continue. We'll see.
Okay, well, here's another what a difference a year makes point. It ended up being four times. Blanca lived with her husband for a few months in this new house, and then she couldn't stand it anymore, and she told him to leave. She wanted to get a divorce. And so we went down there and helped move out my uncle's stuff and load it into a truck. You know, that's kind of sad. Not kind of. Anytime a relationship falls apart, it is sad. But the exercise paid off in that. And that's something that I know that people in the family have taken advantage of, that they've appreciated that I've been exercising and running and doing push-ups and such, because suddenly there are manual labor jobs that need to be done. And I guess they've asked me to help with them. The hardest was that we came here to the cabin a month and a half ago, and my brother had brought a miniature backhoe, and he dug this great big trench, and we bought two dump trucks full of gravel, and we filled the trench with gravel, then covered it up. And it was harder manual labor than I've ever had to do. Carrying these wheelbarrows full of gravel was hard, hard work. And I was able to keep up with everybody else, with the men, you know what I mean? And maybe I would have felt less contributory if I hadn't been exercising all of this time. But the job got done. We got it done in a day. It was good because my brother had to return that. It was a machine. It was really impressive to watch him run it. And eventually, he realized that he could use the backhoe to fill the wheelbarrows with gravel so that we didn't have to use shovels and that we could just stand there for the minute that it took him to fill the wheelbarrow and then push the wheelbarrow up the hill and dump it into the trench rather than shoveling rocks into the barrel, then move the barrel, then bring the barrel back, then shovel more rocks into it. Even so, yeah, it was one of those where I woke up in the night, my arm muscles just screaming, and I had to take something. And it was something that I hadn't really experienced. Kind of like the world's longest episode of the Rish Outcast, which you're experiencing now.
So when I went to Vegas last week, I guess, I was driving with my uncle, and ever since I was a kid, my uncle was like this fountain of knowledge, of confidence and advice and the secrets of the universe. And in his philosophy, everything is attainable. All of your goals, everything that you put your mind to getting, you can get. And for a long time, I was just like, wow, it's amazing that, you know, he is able to do this thing. And it's just an aspect of his personality. He is totally convinced of his place in the universe. He's totally confident that all doors will open up for him. And instead of me appreciating that over the years, I've started to resent it. In the same way that somebody listening to my podcast might be like, geez, guy, just stop for a minute with the self-deprecating jokes or the, you know, nobody can hate themselves as much as you claim to hate yourself. Well, the same thing with my Uncle John. It's just like, okay, stop, dude. Nobody can like them. Nobody can be their own number one fan as much, you know. And so when we were driving to Vegas, we talked for a good long stretch of time. And, you know, he asked me what I wanted in life. And it's professionally, I would like to make money for the things that I enjoy doing, for my writing and for audiobooks, for podcasting. But personally, my philosophy for the last decade or so has been, what I want more than anything is that I'm somewhere and I'm in a place, a location, whether it's a mall or a bar or a restaurant or a store, and an attractive woman comes in. And I would like to know that I had a chance with her. It's succinct, it's very straightforward, it's maybe one long sentence that I've just honed of like, what would you like if you could change anything? And my uncle, he just doesn't get that, because for him, he honestly believes that that is where he is in his life. And I guess it hasn't given him contentment or whatever, but like a perfect 10 could walk in on the arm of a European nobleman, and my Uncle John would still be confident that she would rather be with him, that he could take her away from the Duke of Shrewsbury. And he told me this story. He was out to lunch with his boss and the secretary. Should I tell the story?
Yes. Yes, tell the story. What you don't understand is that it's been a year and I can't remember it word for word.
Well, let me sum up the story in one sentence. To win a bet, my Uncle John went and hit on a strange woman and totally beguiled her, totally dampened her drawers, then had to tell her that, you know, it was just for a bet, for a conversation, that he's married, and that really hurt her feelings because she was so into him. I should have just told the story. I don't know that I am a good enough storyteller to do it justice, though. But I remember it was 10 days ago. After I heard that story, I just thought, you know, if that were to happen to me, I would never stop telling that story. That would be a high point of my whole life. See, now I feel like I should have told the story because it was amazing. And the next day I was with his older brother. We went to Walmart. We were loading up the U-Haul and we'd gotten so dirty that my Uncle Len needed to go to Walmart and get a new shirt. And so I said, oh, I'll go with you. And we went and I told him this story and he laughed. And he said, I remember the first time John told that story. It's evolved since then. And I said, oh, no, no, Len, it was just this week that this happened. And he's like, yeah, okay. And he told me a detail of the story that I had left out, but that John had told me the night before. And he said, yeah, that was from about 10 years ago he told that story. And it, I don't know, I guess it made the story more palatable. It made my life more palatable. Because I was just thinking, well, how can there be that much of a discrepancy between people? Between the winners and the losers. Anyway, I was really appreciative that my uncle clarified that John has been telling this story for years. And, I mean, I would, as I said.
Yeah, that is a regret, guys. I wish I had told the story word for word the way that he told it to me. Because it was a fairy tale. It was, like I said, one of those where if a person said this to me, I would say, okay, well, this is it. This is the coolest I have ever felt. But I didn't. I didn't do that.
What do you want in life? And is it attainable? I don't know how personal to be. But, you know, I'm pretty sure I'm never going to get what I want. I mean, the thing about a pretty girl walks in and I know I have a chance with her. That's a fantasy. You know, it's like, what would you like most in life? Not to be able to intercourse myself with a bunch of 15-year-old girls or anything like that, but just that knowledge that I have a shot, that kind of thing. Again, why did you say 15? Why not 18? Why not 80? It was a number. Sorry.
I was really tempted to cut that line because it's one of those things where it's just meant to be a joke of, you know, like various fantasies that someone could have that. But yeah, we have seen that people can say things like the new host of Jeopardy that lasted a week, right? You know, you say something in a podcast that is meant to be funny, but people dig it up and say, no, this is not acceptable. And that bit right there, you know, that's one of those things. People don't care about the context. They don't care about the fact that I said that it was just a number. It could have been 80. They don't care about that. Should I have cut that out? Well, sorry for not doing it. It was not meant to be taken seriously.
I'm a pretty weak person.
Yes.
I need validation. I need somebody somewhere to say, I like you. I think you're doing good work. I appreciate you, et cetera, et cetera. And I guess that's not great. Probably the real winners in life are the ones that can say, you know, I don't care whether you like me or not. I don't care whether you want me to succeed. I'm going to succeed anyway. And then everybody else catches up. Everybody else sees and says, wow, oh, wow, that person is a winner. But I would like to have somebody in my life that makes me feel like I'm on the right track. That, you know, I'm not there yet, but I need to keep going. I need to keep struggling. I need to keep working. I need to have a positive attitude. I was telling John that you feel like there's something missing in your life, that you're not whole, that there's a piece that's missing, and it would be great to find that piece, to finally feel like I am whole. And he said a surprising thing. He said, that's an admirable fantasy, but that can be dangerous. That kind of thinking can be dangerous. That you're expecting somebody else to fix you, to complete you, to give meaning to your life. He says, you're never going to find that. You need to be able to give yourself meaning. You need to be able to say, I'm okay with nobody else around. There was a song that I used to hear on the radio all the time. It was this anthem, you know, for an independent young woman that doesn't need any man in her life. There are a lot of songs like that because there is a hungry market for that kind of song. I'm not going to criticize, I understand that there is an audience for that sentiment. And I responded to the song as well. It wasn't a I would like to shoot every man I see song, which also has a huge audience. It was a I'm doing fine on my own song. Things are going well for me on my own. And it's a really well done song. I can't, for some reason, I can't sing it right now. I can't think of how it goes, but I dug it. Even though I knew it didn't apply to me really. In the same way as I read an interview with Jordan Peele after Get Out came out and was doing so well. He said, you know, I'll hear these white audiences enjoy the movie and they get a thrill out of the movie. And that's not why I made it. I didn't make the movie for them. And it didn't hurt my feelings or anything. It just made me sad that he said that. Because my response to that movie was the response of a human being empathizing with another human being going through that, regardless of the color of our skin or anything like that. And that's how I felt about this I'm doing fine on my own song. I know that this song is not made for me, that this girl is singing about herself and, you know, other girls like her. But it spoke to me anyway. Did I become Shatner then, just then? I thought about it, Spock, and I could see myself in the song.
Jim, it is illogical for you to see yourself in a song written for an independent young woman. Damn it, Spock. It's not about who the song is written for. It's about who hears it. How can you, with those giant ears, not hear the point of the song?
The funny thing is, when I was editing this yesterday, I thought, oh yeah, I remember that song. What happened to that song? What was that song? And I don't know. I bet I don't know. I never heard the song again after doing this recording. And I don't even know how I could find that song. Because it would be great to say, oh, by the way, the song that I was talking about was... Don't know.
So yeah, John said that that was a dangerous thing. That you can believe that there's somebody out there that can make you happy. And there's not. Only you can make you happy. And part of me feels like that's a super cynical idea. Like when you hear somebody say, well, love is a fairy tale. Love is something that we label escapism. Love is for children. I think the truth probably lies somewhere in the middle, in between my super naive Hallmark movie of the week idea of meeting somebody and saying, oh, hey, now I am happy. Wow. And John's idea of love 'em and leave 'em, but the most important part of that sentence is leave 'em. I have no idea. This was originally an episode with me asking myself in the future questions. Okay, so going back to something I said before. So 2002, I met this woman and I really liked her. And I had this experience with a girl in school that I liked. She was attractive and there seemed to be something, the possibility of something between us. And it never went anywhere. And she confronted me about it and said, you know, I feel like you were interested in me, but you know, you never did anything about it. And it didn't break my heart because I wasn't in love with this girl. And oh my gosh, what if I had been? That would have been crushing, soul crushing. Maybe it would have actually changed me in some fundamental way. But in 2002, that was fresh on my mind. And so I told this coworker, this lady, how much of an impact her presence had had on me and how there had been this awakening. And wow, I feel so much because of you. I went for it because I didn't want that. I didn't want a repeat of that. You never made your move shit. And so I really, really just put my heart on the line and let her know this stuff. And I don't regret doing that, even though she made it clear that, yeah, that's nice. But she was not interested. So the point is, though, that's 18 years ago, 19 years ago for you. And I don't regret that. I'm a tiny bit embarrassed by it, but not really. I went as far as I had written a love song, a song called Found, that I wrote for her, and I gave her a copy of that song. Something I've never done before or since. Because I wanted to lay it out there bare. I wanted there to be no ifs, ands, or buts. You're spending the night with Fred Garvin, male prostitute. That was important to me. I don't really have an answer. I don't really have a moral behind this. What are your thoughts? What are your feelings with a little bit more wisdom and life experience in your rear view?
Boy, does living a year longer make me have more wisdom? I haven't got an answer to that. I'm also sick of putting the audio drops for every time I say I don't know.
Every time you say, I don't know, this trigger gets pulled.
People that have a lot of relationships, let's say Taylor Swift, right? They can learn things from those relationships and apply them to the next one. But it doesn't mean that you're going to do everything perfectly the next time. People are different. And the experience that I mentioned, and I've mentioned it a lot on the show because it is one of the benchmark experiences that I have had. The one that I'm talking about is when there was the girl who said, "No, I know that you were interested in me, but you didn't do anything about it. You never made your move. And so I moved on." And that was a huge slap in the face, a resounding one that I learned from and never quite got over. But the point I'm trying to make is just because I say, okay, I'm going to go the other way, I'm going to let this girl know exactly how I feel, doesn't mean that she's going to respond the same way as the first one would have. People are different and people respond differently to the same thing. I guess I was mentioning Taylor Swift. If you're somebody like that and you just constantly have a line of prospective boyfriends, then you can make all sorts of fun mistakes. And you can not make any mistakes at all and still the relationship doesn't work out. But that sort of stuff is hard. I was talking to my cousin yesterday about, so my uncle Len, who I've talked a little bit about in this episode and in many episodes, has a daughter, and she was a teenager, and she went out with this boy, and he asked her to marry him. I think, coming from Uncle Len, it was the first date, but technically it may have been the second date. And I found that just astounding. It floored me. And my cousin, Cammie, did not say yes, but I was just like, can you believe that? And my cousin said, well, sure, yeah. I mean, I know lots of people who proposed on the second date or, you know, got married a month after they met somebody and they're still together. So that throws a monkey wrench in my relationships are hard argument, but it doesn't contradict what I was saying about mistakes being made and each relationship being different. In fact, it supports that there are people, yes, that I knew she was the one from the moment I saw her walk into the room. You hear stories like that. Then there are others of, you know, I've had 50 boyfriends in my life and none of them have worked out. This has all been a very rambling episode, a very, very, very long episode, but an episode with lots of introspection, an episode of lots of philosophy and asking questions. And honestly, I could have just put out the August to August from 2020 the way it was. And it would have been an okay episode. Would have been a heck of a lot shorter. But in answering it a year later, I think it's a better episode. I don't know that it's one of my best episodes.
I don't know, Margot.
But I hope you guys got something out of it, something interesting out of it. You can ask yourself these questions. You can, I was going to say, I'll put out a version with the empty spaces in it and you can answer them yourself. But I'm not going to do that. Let's go on.
I do apologize for this being the worst episode in the history of my bad episodes. But gosh, it's hard to drive and talk and think and not get muddled, not get off track. I would say, well, I'll do better next time, but this is kind of it. This is as well as I can do. So I'll leave it with you for the final word. Thanks.
Well, thank you, slightly younger Rish. I have learned a few things over the past year. I hope that you have too. And this was an experiment. This is something that maybe I will do again, like maybe on my birthday next year and say, hey, come back to me in 3 years and answer these 5 questions. But a lesson that I needed to learn then was that I should have written down the questions, maybe come up with 10 and had them be concise and easy to get to, because this was super long because I was going all over the place. I didn't know what I wanted to talk about. That's a lot of what happens with podcasting. I don't think this is the worst ever episode. I hope you don't think that it was either. I hope it was worth your time. And thank you for listening. And next time, we'll be back with a story. I know because I've already edited that episode. See you next August. Good night.
I'm going to let you in on a little secret. This burlap sack filled with squirming madness was produced under a Creative Commons Attribution No Derivatives 3.0 license. That sounds crazy too, I realize, but it means that you may download and copy the files free of charge, but they do not belong to you. Hence, you cannot charge for them or alter them for your own perfidious purposes.
Wow, perfidious?
Yes, like your taint.
I'm not sure the word can be used that way.
And I'm not sure a Sean Connery impression can be used this way, boy. And yet here we are. And I urge you to consider going to www.patreon.com/RishOutfield to support the show, if you would enjoy more of this madness.
Fair enough.
Good night.
God, this new phone is so big. It weighs 3 times what the last one did. And yet it's only twice as big. Sometimes I will pick up the old one, the old phone, and just be like, what, really? This is how light and small that other phone was? That's hard to believe. And yeah, it's always falling. It's always falling out of my pocket. It's always, I'm sitting on it, and it's just too big and cumbersome. And it's like going through life like John Holmes or something. Okay, scratch that. It's nothing like that. I've got to hit this ATM here, draw some paychecks. It's my last check for the script that I wrote. I got paid, and I wonder if that's something that you look back at fondly, or whether you just go, well, that's something that I did. Writing to please others. I think I did a Rish Outcast talking about that, the experience of writing to please others. I meant for this to be a short little episode. It isn't. Damn it. I wonder about that shit about the 15-year-old. Should I have cut that out? Ah, crap.